Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in beautiful downtown Hummel's Wharf. Matt, you seem to be taken aback by the downtown part.
What? It's nice.
It's downtown.
It is, I guess, sort of.
And we are, of course, on a Monday, brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury, purdyinsurance.com. Served the Valley for decades. Right insurance, you're covered. Best price they can find. I don't care if it's auto, home, life, business, whatever it may be. And insurance agents that in no way, shape, or form think you're a number. They know that you are an individual that has needs. And if you need help, they're there to do exactly that. They are all in on customer service. It is Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. On a weekend of college football and a weekend of the NFL, where there was a lot of excitement over the weekend, it is Tiger Woods that steals the show.
A tap in for Tiger. We thought we'd never see it, and I don't believe he thought either. Tour championship winner, Tiger Woods, a winner again, number 80.
Listen to that crowd. Listen. I watched him play the final three, four holes yesterday, and to then see on 18... the mass of humanity moving toward the 18th green, where he then had to emerge from that mass of humanity. I thought security, by the way, did a great job for him. Hey, we are in a moment where we're always told this is the biggest, the best, the greatest, whatever, and it's not really. It's really good. But we're always being told by the current media group that everything, oh, it's a great, oh, it's big, we never see anything like this. All right. Yesterday was one of the pure moments of unbridled joy and excitement I've seen from a crowd in a long time. A long time. It was over a golfer who has come back from back fusion surgery. He has four back surgeries, including back fusion. Somehow he has remade his swing and put together a marvelous year. And guess what? He has gone from the guy that was like, I could tolerate people around him, to now somebody who has a greater appreciation for everything around him, including the fans, stopping and signing as often as possible, has a greater appreciation for his competitors, I think because of his Ryder Cup experience. Did you see him stop and talk to all the competitors? See him stop and take a moment and congratulate Justin Rose on winning the FedEx? Because Rose won the FedEx yesterday, which is a $10 million bonus. And he took the time to stop and congratulate him on doing that. He'll tell Tiger Woods to walk by and go, yeah, you're great, way to go. Yeah, nice. Right? He appreciates everything more. And now he's gone from, and somebody, I've been around tournaments and covered tournaments where Tiger Woods has played. There are people that, at that point 5 years ago, loved him. There are people that despised him and hoped he would bogey every hole and would watch him to see if he'd foul up and hit it into the woods. And there are people who were there saying, my goodness, that's Tiger Woods, and out of my tremendous curiosity, I want to tell everybody at least I saw him, even though I'm not crazy about him. Now, 5 years later, after everything he's been through, he is absolutely beloved. Those who are curious now love him. Those that are hoping that he'd bogey every hole, love him. And those who loved him before, love him even more now. You can just see it. I mean, when he walked over the bridge at Bellerive and looked to his left and waved to the crowd, and they had that great camera shot on CBS, the unbridled happiness of the crowd and what they were showing him and what it meant to him. And then you see yesterday, when he finished, he was about ready to cry. And you heard the crowd in the background to that. That was unbelievable. He is now a universally beloved figure, which is what he was not 5 years ago. Everyone loves a great comeback story. He's author to beauty. All right. Penn State, Ohio State coming up Saturday night. Beaver Stadium, 7:30 the kickoff on at 6 o'clock here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. And joining us now from statecollege.com, Ben Jones. Ben, welcome back. Great to have you with us.
Hey, thanks for having me, Steve.
What were your thoughts on the pros and cons of what you saw Friday night?
On an offensive side of the ball, I think if you're a Penn State fan or someone watching Penn State, you wanted to see Penn State go out and have the same sort of offensive success that it had had the past few weeks. You kind of just want to see that going into Big Ten play. You want to see steps forward, not steps back. I thought Juwan Johnson had the sort of game everybody had sort of expected him to start the season with. He caught all his passes, had a touchdown. He looked much more like himself. Miles Sanders continues to, you know, be impressive and look confident in his role. Ricky Slade is, I think, getting a little bit of confidence back after some early season fumbles. So offensively, you know, maybe KJ Hamler feels like he could have a better game. Maybe DeAndre Tompkins feels like he could be more involved at times. But ultimately, you know, you get 63 points on the board. It's hard to argue with that. I think obviously, you know, coming out of this game, you look at the defensive side of the ball again and go, you know, in the second half, this group seems to get it together, seems to figure it out. It kind of reminds you a little bit of 2016, where they were much more a second half team in really every phase. But at the same time, I think, you know, everybody has looked at these four games and gone, can you make those sorts of mistakes against Ohio State? Can you play like this against Ohio State? And there have been a lot of moments where the answer has been no. So I think, you know, there's a balance between this Penn State team is obviously, you know, better than most teams in the country. They put up a lot of points. Their defense, to their credit, gets the job done. Asked to. It's just a matter of what's it going to look like this weekend. And I think really, unlike last year where I think everyone thought, Penn State might go into this game and win in Columbus, and they, for all intents and purposes, basically did until the very end. I'm not sure that anybody really knows what to expect this weekend. So if anything, there's just sort of a tentative, we're going to have to wait and see.
When you watched them Friday night defensively, what were some elements that you saw that were positive, and what were a couple things that you found to be concerning?
Tackling has always been, has been an issue, you know, at times this year. I think the good thing that Penn State does have is there's a lot of different guys that are playing out there. Anytime you've got depth, you know, that's always a plus on the defensive line. I think Sharif Miller has played pretty well. I think Tariq Castro Fields has done well for himself. But, on the other side, in terms of concerns, you know, John Reed looks like a guy who hasn't played football in a year and missed a game this year. So he's rusty. And James Franklin said it after the game, you don't really know who the best 11 guys are on this defense. There's really not a guy that you can really lean on for a play, maybe Imani. But, you know, it's easy enough to avoid a corner, just don't throw it to him. I think the linebacker position is still an area that they're trying to figure out. But I think, you know, there were plays, I remember Micah Parsons made a nice tackle late in the game. That kind of reminds you that there are a lot of athletes on that side of the ball. You look back at the Iowa game last year, where Penn State's defense wasn't bigger than Iowa's offense, but they were faster and more athletic. Sometimes that can make up for it. So I think if these guys can limit their mistakes and sort of lean on their abilities, there's no chance they can't make the stops they have to. But I think right now, Penn State's trying to figure out who exactly they're going to lean on to make those stops.
When you watch Miles Sanders at running back in conjunction with the offensive line, what are you seeing?
I think we're seeing a guy who is very productive with what's in front of him. I think Saquon's always going to be an outlier because he does things that, generally speaking, you wouldn't tell your running backs to do, but he was able to pull it off in ways that your running back couldn't in the first place. So I think there was always a tendency when he got tackled in the backfield to say, just run forward. And I think the thing that Miles has done a really good job with is, and for a lot of different reasons, I think he's been good at getting those 4 or 5 yards of carry. He's been able to find those holes. There are aspects of his game that aren't as good as Saquon's, but I think ultimately if your running back giving you 5 or 6 yards of downhill running, has that ability to break a play open, that's really what you're asking him for. There's a reason why Saquon is a rarity and Penn State still managed to win with a lot of you know, average to above average running backs over the years. And I think Miles is coming to his own. He sees the field well. But I think really the best compliment you can give him right now is that this offensive line is giving him holes. He's hitting those holes, lowering his shoulder, and when he can, he's getting around guys and getting a few extra yards.
In the passing game, of course, Saquon Barkley was very important in the passing game for Penn State in every year he was here, but especially last year, he was outstanding in the passing game. This was a game, by the way, that no running back caught a pass. Is that an area in the passing game that you can look at and say, okay, you know, getting the running backs more involved in the passing game can make a difference?
Yeah, I mean, and I think you've seen, you know, with Saquon what that difference can be. It's just another guy you've got to cover. It's another thing you have to deal with. And to a certain extent, some of these passes into the flat, I think, you know, are almost an extension of the running game in the first place. You know, I think that if you can spread the field, you give yourself better opportunities. And I think for the most part, while, you know, KJ and DeAndre and everybody, they've played well for themselves this year. Juwan, you know, coming around that corner for himself. You know, I think that the more weapons they can find offensively, the better off they're going to be. And we really haven't seen Penn State lean on Miles Sanders in the passing game. But, you know, for all everything we've heard, he's got pretty good hands. Maybe he doesn't have Saquon's hands. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I mean, if you can pass the ball to a guy like that and get him into the open field, you know, it's not rocket science here sometimes. Right. Just get your players the ball.
Right. Well, there's only one ball. So, you know, so they've got Hamler, they've got Johnson, they got DeAndre, they got Polk, they got tight ends, there's one ball. When you've watched Ohio State, what have you thought?
You know, it is kind of interesting that you're seeing an Ohio State team, which feels like for the first time in a really long time, where they have a real, and I was a big JT Barrett fan, but it's like a real quarterback there. I think Haskins is a guy, his arm strength, his ability to throw with confidence into small windows, you know, it's a different kind of Ohio State team than we've seen over the years in terms of mobility at that position. I think J.K. Dobbins is as good as anybody in college football. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is Ohio State. They've got skilled players. They've got, you know, fast defenders. They've got a good quarterback. You know, I think if you're Penn State, you're a little concerned because Haskins has been so good at throwing it. And I think generally, past few years, if this defense has had a weakness, it hasn't been in the run game. It's been against good quarterbacks. You could probably say that for anybody when you face a good quarterback, that they tend to struggle a little bit. But I think, you know, it puts an emphasis on this first half of this game, because I think if Penn State can hang around until halftime, because I think they're going to be able to put points on the board, but if they can stick around until halftime, you know, this second half adjustments, if they play out like they have the past few weeks, you know, there's no reason Penn State can't win this game. But if they come out a little slow, Haskins, you know, isn't overwhelmed by his first true road test as a starter, and he's able to do what he did last week. You know, obviously Tulane and Penn State are a little different, but still, you know, if he can throw out a first couple early punches, you know, it might be a quick night. So I think if you're Penn State, you've got to figure out a way to get to him, and you can't let these receivers get behind you.
What kind of role can the crowd play, especially when you consider Ohio State? I don't care what they say, they haven't played a true road game all year.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we've been to a bajillion games at Beaver Stadium, and I think we both know that, you know, when that crowd gets going, especially with a quarterback that hasn't been on the road before, with a team that's got a lot of guys that haven't been on the road before, you know, that can make a difference, especially if you can get to them early, or not literally the crowd get to them early, but, you know, just sort of if you can get – keep the crowd in the game, you know, you're going to have a good chance, because that group, you give 108,000 Penn State fans a whole afternoon to be well hydrated. You know, everybody's going to come into that game, you know, with suddenly twice the optimism they have on Monday. So there's no doubt you keep that crowd in the game, and you've got yourself a real chance.
This is the kind of game where, for example, I look at Haskins. Look, he may be able to handle noise and things like that 98% of the time. My question is, what's going to happen to 2%? So, you know, that to me is the big question. Because I think, you know, he's obviously a poised player. But, I mean, essentially, the Tulane game is like watching a 7-on-7 drill.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very different experience. And there's no doubt, you know, you can say for both teams, really, which I think makes this weekend so interesting. Outside of TCU, you know, neither team has really played – you know, they're sort of preparing to play a team finally that they're both going to find out how good they are, which I think makes this weekend interesting because, you know, you've got the number one and number two scoring offenses in the nation.
Yeah.
And you don't really know, you know, how accurate that truly is. So I think, you know, you're absolutely right. We've seen, you know, you mentioned the crowd. I was looking, you know, the past two games, the past three meetings really between this team, these teams have turned on odd plays. They've turned on weird things. And sometimes, you know, you can play a great game for 98% of the time, and it only takes that 2% to see it swing the other direction. You know, obviously the last time Ohio State was here is kind of self-explanatory how the little things can make a difference. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. He can play a great game. So, you know, it only takes a few plays to turn it.
Which then brings me to the other part. What are a couple of your preconceived storylines that you'd like to explore this week?
Yeah, I mean, I wrote a thing yesterday that I was interested in about last night, just sort of the mistakes that Penn State's made and what that has done in terms of taking points off the board or leading to points for the opponent. So far, they've had 69 points plus or minus, you know, that have either come off the board or have been, you know, helping the opponent based on little things like offside or pass interference or just offensive pass interference. In a lot of cases, you know, I can tell you that, you know, Penn State's had five touchdowns taken off the board, but on four occasions they've scored again on that same drive. And I think, you know, obviously there's some resiliency there, but at the same time, you don't want to have to score 14 points against Ohio State to get credit for seven. So I think really the theme of this week, as much as it is the defense finding itself, is, you know, can Penn State get out of its own way? Can it make things as easy as it can by not getting in its own way? And I think ultimately, you know, I think Penn State's got a real chance in this game if it can just eliminate those mistakes, eliminate those miscues, because, you know, this is not a talent disparage, you know, that we've seen over the past, well, you know, 5 years ago, you go, Ohio State's clearly on paper a more talented team. I don't think that's the case this year at all. So when you've got two teams that are pretty evenly matched in the talent, it comes down to who makes mistakes and who executes better. So I think if Penn State's able to do that, you know, they're giving themselves a real good shot.
Ben, a pleasure. Thanks so much for your time.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Steve.
No. I hope you have an opportunity at some point to go online and look at the Army locker room in Norman after they lost in overtime to Oklahoma. It tells you everything about them. The locker room was absolutely spotless. Exactly the same way they walked into it. Take a look at that picture. This is after they lost in overtime to a top five team on the road, and there wasn't a shred of tape left on the floor. Tells you a lot about them. All right. Come back with more in a moment as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by our good friends at Purdy Insurance. All right. Great to have you with us on the show. It's interesting. There's no doubt you watch Dwayne Haskins, and Dwayne Haskins is a terrific quarterback. Wow, do I really like the way he throws the ball. Really great skills. Sees the field, it seems, pretty well. He's had a lot of time to throw, but he's done a great job with it. I can wax poetic about how good I think Dwayne Haskins is. And I wouldn't trade Trace McSorley for anybody. Anytime, anywhere. As terrific as Haskins is, I wouldn't trade Trace McSorley. Haskins will get deservedly a lot of praise going into this game. He's earned it. He is really good. Great pro prospect. I mean, we're going to see what decision he makes at the end of this season. Because he is a redshirt, by the way. He's a redshirt sophomore. He's a third-year player. So he can leave after the season if he wants. But no offense, I would not in any way, shape, or form trade Penn State's guy for their guy. Not in a heartbeat. I go into a game like this, I want nine. I go into any game, I want nine. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. We're in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Into the game with number nine. Every time.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Purdy's have served this valley for decades. They've found their customers, whether it's auto, home, life, business insurance, the best insurance that they're covered, and found them the best price possible. And their service to you, the customer, is constant. If you need them, they're going to jump right in and take care of it. But they're also trying to constantly update and, again, get you the best deal possible. Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. I want my insurance agent to care the way the Purdy's do. Right? That's why you got to go with them. And I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. By the way, game day, you mentioned game day earlier. Game day is going to be on the old main lawn, by the way, which is where it was last year. So they'll be on the old main lawn from 9 until noon. So the exact spot that they were in a year ago is where they're going to be this time. Okay? I will also be cutting my lawn in the exact same spot I cut it last year.
Is that right?
Yeah. Well, that's like people say, oh, what do you do? What do you do? What do you do about what? Hey, like, what do you want to know? Haskins is 7, Weber's 25, Dobbins is 2, McCall, the third stringer's 30, Hill's 14, Campbell's 21, Max 11, 13 is Barry the tight end. You know, Saunders 80 is the backup. You know, Jones is 86, Cornell is 9, Borland's 32. I mean, what do you want me to do? I just got it's got to get done. I got to cut my lawn. I got the other part done. How much more do you want? Arnett's 3. You know,
maybe people want to see you on the stage with Corso doing picks.
Nope, that is not gonna happen. I mean, remember how Jack, Derek, and I did picks, and that. And we're not doing it this year. And that all has to do with whether they can sell something or not. Okay? And we're awful. Oh, man. So.
Well, hopefully we got somebody on from game day on the show later this week. That'll be fun.
Well, we're supposed to. I mean, they tell us. And they tell us because they claim they owe us. Okay.
Hey.
We'll find out how they feel about it, because we were supposed to get somebody last year, and they fouled it up. Then we put in a request in the offseason, they fouled it up. So, we'll see. If we get them, great. My guess is if we get somebody, I wouldn't be surprised if it's Reese Davis.
I'd probably agree.
But feel fortunate to get anybody. We're going to get Paul Keels tomorrow, play-by-play voice of Ohio State. Now I'm doing his show tonight at 7:40, plus I'm doing the pregame show. And then he also texted me he needed a favor on Friday. A typical Paul request. If I'm casting a play and I want somebody to play the voice of God in the play, Noah, I would pick Paul. He'd beat out the suit. God? Noah? It's me. And then Jack Hamm on Wednesday. It's a strong lineup. By the way, Neil Coulong tomorrow, post-mortem on the Steelers, who have been a juggernaut through two games. I've been impressed. All right, let's bring in to talk about Philadelphia. And I'm going to start with the Phillies, by the way, when I get to it with them. It's Matt Leon from KYW Philadelphia. Matt, welcome. Great to have you with us.
Good to be with you.
By the way, I will point out that the Pirates at the moment actually have a better record than the Phillies by a half game.
Yeah, and I see the Pirates widening that gap the way things are going now. The ship isn't taking on water. It is on its way out of the bottom.
Why?
What, I don't know.
What went awry with this?
I think there was probably some of it, I think, was they were playing above their heads. Like, all the analytics kind of told you, you know, the run differential wasn't equivalent to where their record was, stuff like that. So I think some of that was a leveling off, but I honestly have no idea. And the thing that's fascinating slash frustrating is they really kind of went off a cliff at the trade deadline when they added a lot of nice pieces. So they actually got better on paper, but the product on the field was much, at first, inconsistent and then just bad. I mean, I can't point to anything, and, you know, I don't know. It's really, really baffling and disappointing. But I think most people thought, I mean, heck, first week of August, you thought, well, there's no way they won't go into the last week.
That's right.
Without at least a really good puncher's chance of getting something. But here we are. You know, now they're just playing out the string now, and it's disappointing. I think it's a lot of questions because I think they are better than last year. They're going to have a significant win improvement, but this last month has really kind of turned things upside down.
Sometimes there's nothing a coach or a manager can do. But what has been the thought process on how Gabe Kapler has handled this, and is there anybody laying a little bit of, if any, at his feet?
I think you have to lay some at his feet. I think he should get a lot of credit for where he had them. I think the high water mark was like August 5th when they were 15 games over or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's impressive for a team that was one of the worst in baseball a year before. But I also think, you know, some of the lineups down the stretch, some of the defensive shifting down the stretch, handling of some starting pitchers. I think from a managerial standpoint, one of the things that was frustrating to watch was Gabe Kapler with a full 40-man roster, because the Phillies have really utilized September call-ups. They have 40 players available, which
right.
you don't see very often, because most managers don't just like extra guys kind of just hanging around.
Right.
And it's led to some decisions where you just kind of get the feeling trying to be too cute and outthink themselves. There was one game, I don't remember against who, but they started Justin Bour at first base. And he batted him third.
I remember this. Yeah, I think you and I talked about this.
Inning. Yeah, and then he walked his second time up in the third inning, and he was the only guy to get on base against whatever pitcher it was, and they pinch ran for him in the third inning of a scoreless game. And afterwards, his rationale was, well, we were just trying to win the game as early as possible. And you're like, well, what is a pinch runner going to do in a scoreless game in the third inning? It smelled of, I don't want to say panic, but it just smelled of overmanaging and making moves because you can to show how smart you are. And there was a lot of that. You saw very few starting pitchers. They would pull guys after 3-4 innings. Now, to be fair, in several of the instances, the guys didn't pitch well enough to earn that,
right.
the ability. But there was just a lot of things that just kind of made you shake your head, and I don't think it was any one thing,
right.
but a lot of things just kind of coming together and really making the last month just tough to watch, even just past the wins and losses. It's just been tough to watch. It hasn't been much fun.
Yeah, I remember the Bour thing in another game where Bour, and I can't remember the pitcher, Matt, had a lifetime plus 500 batting average against the guy. And it wasn't like, he wasn't like he was 3-for-5. I mean, he actually had a history against, and didn't start him. He started Santana at first base, and the reasoning was he's a better defensive player. I mean, you use analytics for a living. Okay, this analytics says he crushes this dude. So it's like stuff like that where you're like, let's have a little better feel.
Yeah, and they had a game in Atlanta, one of the games in Atlanta. I think it was the first game on Thursday, where they'd been starting Carlos Santana at third base to try to get, you know, Bour in the lineup, maybe get Hoskins at first and get a little better defensive outfield, which, okay, you know. Santana's not terrible at third, and you know, his bat could make it worth it. But specifically, like, they would put a defensive shift on, and they would have Carlos Santana basically playing shortstop. He's the only guy on the left side of the infield.
Right.
And there was one play where a hard ground ball, and he couldn't handle it. And you're just like, all right, so you've got your fourth best third baseman defensively playing the entire left side of the infield at shortstop,
right.
And you're
right.
Surprised when things go wrong. Like,
right.
Yeah, if you're going to do that type of defensive shifting, right. I think you have to take into consideration who you're doing it with. You know, it looks great on paper, but there's the human element that I think gets lost a lot of times. And those are the types of things that just didn't make a lot of sense going down.
See, that's why I've talked a lot, and when I've done baseball, I've said, look, I said, you'll ask yourself, why do some teams put a shortstop on the left side when they shift to the right, and other teams put a third baseman over there? Well, the reason you put the third baseman in shallow right field or near the bag is because they don't have the range. Other third basemen have the range, so you can move your shortstop over. All right? That's the determining factor. Santana doesn't have the range to do that. That's why you put him on the other side of the bag. Right? Whatever. That's another conversation of common sense for later. All right, the Eagles. Why? Your thoughts. How did Carson Wentz look to you? Because you're talking 9 months and 12 days since the surgery.
I think the best compliment you can play, that if you just watched that game yesterday with no context, you know, not knowing when he was hurt, what he was coming back from, anything like that, you wouldn't have thought that he had missed a beat. I'm not saying he played great. He didn't. He made some mistakes, and he made some decisions that once he gets a few more snaps back under his belt, he won't make. But, I mean, for the most part, he looked spry. He had escapability, had some of those wow plays where he would just slip away from tacklers, make a throw on the run. So I think bottom line, that's the most important thing to come out of that, is that he looks healthy and he is ready to go. And obviously finding a way to get the win. He started out really well, touchdown on the first drive. He ended really well, touchdown on the last drive that proved to be the game-winning point. Up and down in the middle. But for the most part, a lot to get excited about, that Carson Wentz is back.
How excited are people in Philadelphia, quote, to get all the pieces back and then work in conjunction with Wentz? Because obviously Wentz had to work with a skeletal offense yesterday.
Yeah, I think that's the thing, that people right now, I think for the most part, are just like, you know what, if they can weather the first four, five, six games of the season, you know, before Wentz would come back and before Jeffrey comes back, and you know, and then Jai and Sproles get banged up and stuff like that, and they lose Mike Wallace. If they can just get to like week six or seven, where all the pieces in theory are pretty much healthy and going, this is going to be a lot of fun. And I think that's what they've done here. I think most people would have taken 2-1 to start the season, probably maybe not the one loss that people would have thought back in July. Losing that game in Tampa, but you know, you win the game over the Falcons, and I think everyone expected them to beat the Colts. So you know, they got Tennessee this week, tough one, but you know, a game I think on paper they should win, and they would be right where I think everybody would hope they would be. You know, when you're getting healthy like this, you just have to find ways to scratch out these games before you really get hit your rhythm and playing your type of football.
Where do you think they were better defensively? What made a difference for them this week?
They were just very stout against the run, which they almost always are, but it's really becoming amazing. I think we talked about this last week, is at home they are almost a different defense than they are on the road, and you see a lot of the statistical breakdowns that really bear this out. You know, I mean, I don't think Andrew Luck is back to where Andrew Luck needs to be as far as having the arm to really challenge you down the field consistently, but they did a very good job, you know, keeping the Colts in check. They didn't turn them over, and they didn't get a ton of pressure. They just kind of played really solid defense. And they didn't get a ton of pressure on the quarterback until that last play, or the second to last drive, where they got that big sack when the Colts were inside the 10-yard line. They were just sounder defensively. There weren't the gaping, you know, DeSean Jackson 20 yards behind everybody, or you know, guys running into each other as a tight end runs a crossing pattern. They just looked crisper and tighter, and tackled better than they did in the loss to Tampa last week.
How telling was it that Jacoby Brissett had to throw the last pass and not Andrew Luck?
Well, I think that screams at you. You know, I mean, that it was a haul. You know, they were wherever they were on the 40, I think.
Right.
But, you know, that kind of tells you a lot, where you know, where Luck's arm strength is right now. And really, you're happy for the kid to get back on the field.
Yeah.
Had to, you know, the last couple of years just been.
No doubt.
It's also a shame. It just kind of shows you that even after all this, he's still not where I'm sure he would hope he'd be. And you have to wonder if he ever will be, you know, at this point. But I thought that was incredibly telling. You know, guy's been sitting for 4 hours, and you say, all right, go throw the most important pass of the game and throw it 60 yards in the air.
Yeah, exactly. I'll say this. I mean, remember, Luck's first 4 years in the league, they made the playoffs. And he wasn't exactly given the best hand to work with either. So,
absolutely.
Thank you, my friend. Always a pleasure.
Thank you, sir.
All right. We'll come back and wrap it up in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. All right, great to have you with us. Brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Paul Keels tomorrow, the play-by-play voice of Ohio State football, along with Neil Kulong with a postmortem on your Pittsburgh Steelers. They play Tampa Bay tonight. No word on whether Antonio Brown is going to arrive in a helicopter.
We do know that Artie Burns may not play tonight and may be replaced by Cody Sensabaugh, which I think just tells you all you need to know about the Steelers' secondary.
Well, I think the window of opportunity just reopened. All right, so.
I don't think they're going to win this football game tonight.
Wow, aren't you negative? I agree with you. I don't think they'll win either.
It's because offensively, I think you're right. I think it's going to be a shootout, and I don't think the Steelers' defense can make a stop when they need to against this Tampa Bay offense. They're just rolling right now, and I can't believe I'm still saying that with Fitzpatrick there at quarterback, but he's been flawless, and the guys that they have outside, I just don't think the Steelers' defense can stop him.
Well, it's an intriguing one, I'll say that. I think it's going to draw a lot of interest tonight. The Steelers will draw a lot of interest anyway. The Steelers are a team that has a universal following. And my thought on Le'Veon Bell is simple. Get rid of him. Move on. Look, you know, it's like, you know, you could be a massively talented guy, but right now he's about as useful with his massive talent to the Steelers, right? I mean, the equipment guy's more useful right now. It's as simple as that. He's not there. He's not present. He's not involved in what's going on. All right. So, I mean, that's the bottom line. But I'd also wait. I mean, I'd also wait. I'd look at him and say, no, we don't have to do anything we don't want. I'd wait till week 9. Hey, you didn't make any money. I'm not kidding about that.
Right now, the Jets are the only team that's interested in the Steelers. That report just came out a little while ago.
Well, the Jets are desperate. Now, remember that.
Oh, yeah, I'm definitely not surprising whatsoever.
Right, they are desperate. So.
But I think you're right, and the Steelers should probably wait just because, A, you have another month or so till the NFL trade deadline, which is October 30th. And then secondly, if you get another injury from a team that's contending, or even you get that team that calls that's maybe just one player away, you never know what you can get.
But I'd also wait just to look at him and say, hey, we'll deal you, we're darn ready to do it. I mean, I wouldn't do anything. I'd take my sweet time. You know? Just for the mere fact that you can. Because, look, what are you going to get for him? You're going to get a 1 or a 2? Cut me a break. You're not going to get a 1 or a 2. You're going to probably get a 5 or a 6 for him. Yeah. You're going to get a 5 or a 6. Pretty simple. Because it's Le'Veon Bell you're going to get. No, you're not. It's just the way it is. You're just not. If he was a quarterback, maybe. Running back, no. Now, you did mention the Jets. The Jets are an interesting crew. They might give them a one or a two because they're desperate.
I'm hearing four as of right now, a fourth-round pick.
Fourth-round pick has some value. After that, they're like, it's catch as catch can. But I'd wait, and I mean, I'd wait, and I'd just say, hey, look, you don't be at work? Fine, you don't have to be at work. And we don't have to move you, and you don't have to be paid a dime. I've had people say, well, he'll get his money. No, he actually won't. Okay? He's going to lose. He's losing $800,000 a week. So he's going to lose over $8 million. Almost $9 million he's going to lose if they don't deal him until week 10. Okay. Great to have you with us on the show today. Appreciate it very much. Tomorrow, Paul Keels, the play-by-play voice of Ohio State, and Neil Kulong, Jack Ham, coming up on Wednesday.